Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, today I was looking for a quiet place to record, and I thought, oh, the cemetery would be a great place to record. It should be quiet there. And as you can hear, there's a constant drone of lawnmowers. I don't know where they are, but I guess it's time to mow the lawns. I don't know, but it's not what I had envisioned. I do hear some birds out here, which is always nice. Okay, well, onward. This week, we're going back in time to an episode produced by Ken Lane, May 31st, 2019, reminiscing about the internet of the 90s and the continued evils of the present World Wide Web. He tops it off with an interview with writer Rachel Monroe. This one is classic Ken Lane, stream of consciousness. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
You know what time it is. It's nighttime on the desert. Because the nighttime is the right time to be ready. Because no person, no earthly soul shall know the day, nor shall they know the hour. Nobody but inside traders and the good Lord. Assuming for the sake of argument that there is a good Lord like Thor or somebody, Kali the Destroyer, we'll take an indifferent one, of course. Or a council that's always infighting, like, we hope, the Nine. Do you know about the Nine? Look it up sometime when you are feeling fundamentally open-hearted and optimistic, because you are going to need that. We all will. Or something or other, if not the Nine. I remember the first time I got a hint of that stuff on the weird old World Wide Web of 15 or 20 years ago. All the underground stuff was suddenly all over the place. People who had the books, who knew the texts, who knew each other, well, they were now making all these connections public, sort of, and posting them on the blogs. You could get on the blogger system, no webmaster required, and you could just publish your fringe academic papers such as they were right there for any like-minded people to read and comment upon, mostly with everyone's personal dignity partially intact. It helped if you were half literate and a little bit weird and at least a little bit smart. Yeah, and if you were long-winded, no word count limits. Write 10,000 words connecting historical waves of flying saucer sightings with major power outages. Link it all up to the sources that you found. And all of a sudden, a lot of clever and half clever people are realizing the world is far weirder than they were taught in grade school, or especially graduate school. And if you went to a wizard prep school or whatever and you already know all this, I appreciate your patience. We'll get to the good part right now. No grand conclusions will be necessary here. What is known is that there's something going on. Something a little wilder than usual. I'm not sure why, but it feels different than some of the other times, some of the other odd times I recall. It almost feels as weird as the 1970s, early 1970s. The world was so weird in that time when I was growing up that I guess I haven't really felt completely at home on this planet since then. Until right about now. Not because of anything in particular going on with the TV shows about the UFOs, which are all based on military and intelligence propaganda, which you should never believe. The only people who 100% understand that you should never believe anything put out for the public by the military are people who have served. They know. Years ago, when I was a newspaper reporter at Camp Pendleton, now and then I'd ask somebody about something that came down from on high or from very low in the case of public affairs. And then I'd hear the laughter. It did not matter whether it was a big story or a small one, but if it was on a press release, well, then you might as well read one of those W.E.B. Griffin paperbacks, because at least you'll get a good potboiler with the fiction. It can be a dumb world with many problems. Almost all of them caused by us, the humans. With great smartness comes great dumbness, Luke 17:6, and it is a beautiful world, the most beautiful one we've got. And we are all idiots here together. Weird animals in the middle of turning into something else, maybe. There's a theory that the gray aliens, as so many people encounter, are actually a hyper-evolved version of our species, the human race. I guess traveling through time to annoy us in our bedrooms for no reason. They've got very big heads to hold their ever bigger brains. And no reproductive organs, because it's all done with some sort of centralized dating app. And they've got these big frog fingers because they like to hang on the outside of your bedroom window at night. They're just no good. I don't want to end up like that. Eyes like big black dinner plates because they live in terrible darkness on some hell earth. some hell earth where they don't even remember the Garden of Eden. But we are turning into something, you know that much. Our brains are getting all diced up by remote control. You know, all night long, according to an investigation by the Washington Post, your cell phone is busy, busy, busy sending all the data about your bummer of a day to a bunch of monster databases that then connect your dull misery to a possible product of interest. And then when you get up in the morning and like some sort of lunatic immediately start looking at your miserable demon-controlled phone, well, it starts telling you what products you need to cover up your personal pain or boredom or whatever it is for a moment. A sense of purpose, and that's what we need, and that's what we never get from looking at a phone, talking on a phone, wasting time. Little moments of purpose. That's enough as long as they come. Now and then, as long as they're still coming, there's a reason to be around. But that takes work to keep them coming. You've got to go out and call for them. That's sometimes the trouble, but you can do it. You go outside and call the dog at night, don't you? Everybody can hear that. Some of you people go outside and call the cat, which the cat probably enjoys somewhere out there, silently laughing at you. Now, another thing we saw recently in the Washington Post and all the other professional news organizations that at least aim toward a sort of ethics, even if they screw it up half the time from overthinking it. Well, another thing was a story first reported by the New York Times, again by a curious trio of bylines, including a freelancer who mostly writes about UFOs, right there on the front page. And these stories, as well as the recent news that the U.S. Navy is encouraging its pilots and sailors to report what they're seeing up there in the skies, well, this has got some people kind of riled up. You can get kind of anxious when you hear about things like a spinning top cartoonish UFO that, quote, hung in the sky for days. End quote. And you've got entire fleets of mystery craft playing with our finest military hardware like it's a bunch of junk. Do you like flying your F-18, Tom Cruise Jr.? Well, how about if we lead you around like a fool and then we just shoot straight up to 30,000 feet in the blink of your slow human eyes? And then maybe we pop out of the ocean 30,000 feet below you. How about that? They've been playing with us for as long as we've been here. They were Foo Fighters in World War II. Seen by fighter pilots on both sides. Both sides saw them. Both assumed they were secret weapons developed by the other side. And now we're hearing the same stuff with these things. It is a very interesting time to be alive. Not that I believe a word that comes out of the alphabet agencies and the Pentagon. I know we're all supposed to be fools, but even a fool knows you never believe a general and you never believe a spy. Spies lie for a living. They don't even have to apologize when they're caught. It's all they do. Spies, in fact, are recruited when they are just babies. After a grandparent or daycare worker calls a special phone number in the back of the phone book. Maybe it's even one of the parents and they say, "Oh, I've got an odd duck over here." No moral compass at all. And so begins the lifelong training of a snitch. Is there something really happening, or is this just another moment of great cultural and political and spiritual dissatisfaction? A time of growing dread and fewer options. Growing dread with it seems nothing but dead ends everywhere, the place of dead roads. It only looks that way. They only want you to see it that way. We do need to be wary. We do need to remember that we got into this mess and we can sure get out of it. It's going to mean a lot of misbehaving soon, which is always fun as long as you're not mean about it. As Gandhi said, punch up. Not down. Now, Ronald Reagan was a deeply weird individual. Everybody can agree at least on that point. And one thing Reagan loved to talk about when addressing the UN or making nuke deals with the Soviets or really just talking to anybody who would listen is that when the space aliens came, we would all put aside our differences here on Earth and destroy the space aliens. Kill them all. It's kind of beautiful in a World War II sort of comic book psychopathic way. And I don't even believe in aliens, which does seem to surprise some people. It's an interesting subject, and I even used to run SETI for Home on my home computer back in the 1990s, I think. Back when computer processing power was costly and it was easier to spread out the chore of going through all these recordings from the radio telescopes trying to find some alien message in there. That seemed kind of nice at the time. But so far, despite a lot of baloney, a lot of double features with shining silver saucers and big-headed space monsters from the costume department, we don't have any evidence for outer space monsters visiting Earth a couple of thousand times per night all over the planet all the time, sometimes staying right in some backwoods corner of Eastern Kentucky or rural France, even though the world is spinning and orbiting a star, which is itself moving at tremendous speed through the galaxy, through the universe. Maybe UFOs are just like those people trying to find a cheap place to park their RV for a couple more nights. Or maybe, like every serious UFO researcher eventually concludes, whatever they are has always been here. It is part of Earth, part of our planet. Maybe they're leftover gods. Maybe they're holographic robots. Maybe they are residue from mistakes made in time travel, dimensional transitions. Maybe they are animals of some kind, semi-intelligent, mostly instinctual animals like us. a few skills, a few brain cells capable of thought, but mostly just globs of nerves and nervousness. Now, if you've read the latest Desert Oracle, then you're already going to know about the situation in the sheds over in Marfa at the more or less new home of our guest here on Desert Oracle Radio, Rachel Monroe, and we will get to that, to the mutilated dolls. Rachel Monroe writes for The New Yorker and Texas Monthly and The Atlantic and Outside Magazine, all good. But what's even better is the kind of stuff she writes for those publications. Stories about brand influencers living in vans for Instagram, the FBI, the National Park Service, murders in the Texas desert, people who fall in love with serial killers, all the stuff we love here. So welcome, Rachel, to the program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on the program.
Can you tell us, without giving away the best part, of which there are many, a little bit about the piece you have in the New Oracle?
Well, I guess it began when I became a property owner, which is still a new and strange thing for me. Been living in Marfa for about 7 years now, and finally got it together to buy a house, but the only house I could afford was sort of a shack. I mean, it has a roof now, which is very exciting.
Congratulations.
But it didn't always. And when I bought it, it had all these sheds on the property, and I had been just so freaked out by the home buying process that I hadn't really fully explored the house and all of its just things around it. And then when I went to peek in those sheds, there was just all sorts of weird things, including bowling balls. I have a bowling ball now, and like a old-timey rocking horse, but then there were also these dolls.
Your friends.
I think we're friends now. I feel really fond of them. Yeah, this one particular shed, which is the sturdiest of all the sheds. It looks like you could maybe keep a goat, maybe some goats in it or something. It has like a big heavy door. And then on the inside, there are these Barbie dolls that somebody has tortured. One of them has just like her legs are cut off, and then her breasts are like, looks like somebody took a lighter and tried to burn them, so they're kind of melted and charred in that way that plastic gets. A couple of them are just like variously dismembered, or they were like poked with something. There's like a lot of little poke holes, and they're just nailed to the walls all over this shed in the backyard of my new house, which I found right after closing.
So this was kind of was this your inspection or your post?
No, it was after that. It was like once it was all, the papers were signed, it was like my house was way too late to go back. It almost feels like they had waited to reveal themselves until it was already a done deal.
And once they did, this led you on a special nighttime research rabbit hole. And it turns out that you're not the first one to find it a little weird to have a bunch of chopped up Barbie dolls on a property.
Well, yeah, I mean, because as soon as I started telling people about it, they're like, oh, clearly it's either a current or soon to be serial killer who else would, you know, torture dolls in these elaborate ways and hang them up with like little nooses and stuff. And so I was just Googling around. I feel like that's a trope from TV and stuff, you know, tortured dolls in the killer's house or something. And so I did end up finding these news stories about a guy who, like, a house, it had all the headlines were like House of Horrors about this police investigation into this house after this man had died. And it was all about the you know, he had been suspected of child murder, and then they went into his house and found mutilated dolls and other things that were like vaguely creepy but not only if you sort of listed them together. You think, like, oh my God, yeah, like a child murderer with murdered dolls, that's terrible. But then I started looking more into those news stories, and this guy was totally not a child murderer, at least in any sort of legal sense. Basically, there was a man who lived in the neighborhood who had known this older man who he accused, who was, I think, a local coach, of molesting him, but not just molesting him, or I don't think he even accused him of molesting him. He accused him of, when he was a boy, the accuser said, he like went out into the woods and saw this man sacrificing children just in these horrific, ridiculous ways, and that after he killed a child, he would put a stone on this giant pyramid of stones that were out there in the woods, and each stone represented a child that he had murdered.
Right, it was like Genghis Khan making the pyramids of skulls.
Exactly. It's a good way to keep track, you know, better than tally marks, I guess. And so this kid, at least in his memory, you know, like sees this, and the older man, the coach guy, is like, if you tell anybody, I'll kill you, and, you know, put another rock on this pyramid, it'll be your rock. And so he flees home and never tells anybody about it ever again, grows into a slightly troubled adult, at some point goes to therapy, has repressed all of this for years and years and years, goes to therapy, and under, I can't remember if it's hypnosis or just like some sort of, you know, regressive therapy, remembers this experience he had as a child about witnessing child murder and this elaborate ritual that his neighbor had.
Uh-huh. But this was not... Oh, I'm watching a sheriff pull up to my recording studio right now.
Really?
Apparently they were just turning around. It's a good random place in the desert to turn around. So this house that you're talking about, this is not the house you moved into.
No, this is a different Barbie. A different Barbie killer house. But to me, it was just a story about how it's like a vaguely creepy thing, right? These dolls, but I don't know. Don't we all kind of torture and mutilate dolls? Isn't that sort of what they're asking for?
That's what I usually do to relax, but now you're not a Marfa right now, is that correct?
No, I am between Wimberley and Fredericksburg, Texas.
So you're on the road. You do a lot of driving, don't you?
I do. Yeah.
How much do you love desert driving?
I think it's the best. You can let your mind meander, you know?
We are going to let you get back on the road, but before, you have to tell us, because I've been seeing it all over social media, you have a book coming out.
It's true. I do. On August 20th, it's called Savage Appetites. And I've been calling it meta true crime. It's about four different women who each became obsessed with a crime that didn't happen to her and kind of worked her way into the story for various motivations, some pretty noble, some pretty creepy. And just using that as a way to think about the obsession with true crime. Why is it always like coded as an obsession, whether it's personal or societal? You realize that the problem is much vaster, and that the evil is not just this one individual. And so that's why you need another one, right? It's why it's like an obsession, not just an interest, because it's incomplete. I think we get obsessed with things that feel like they're not finished, you know, if it's not like tied off in a nice bow. So you just need more and more and more.
So we're preparing in the wrong way for the inevitable breakdown of this society.
Yeah. I mean, the Weimar Republic, like, see how that one ended.
That's yeah.
My optimistic take.
This has been Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
We are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Well, I guess we've had a normal variety of weather for here this week, from snow to rain to glorious sunny days. It's been a while since we've talked about local opportunities to get out and support our healthy environment, or just hang out with like-minded people to learn some new skills or improve some old ones. Here are a few things that came to my attention this week. Grow Wild Montana is sort of a new kid on the local nonprofit block. Their mission is to conserve native species in the Upper Gallatin watershed through education, habitat restoration, and collaborative land stewardship. On June 8th, from 9 to 11 in the morning, they are having a Gallatin River weed pull. And it says, join us and Madison Gallatin Trout Unlimited for our 16th annual event. Maybe they're not such a new kid on the block. Maybe they're just new to me. Anyway, it says, to date, 509 volunteers have removed 10,139 pounds of noxious weeds from the banks of the Gallatin River. Show your love for the canyon and dislike for noxious weeds by joining us. And I'm going to give you some contact info in a moment. But another thing they have coming up, June 9th through 10th and July 8th, there's going to be a native plant sale fundraiser. And that appears to be at different locations. For more information, you can contact info@growwildmontana.org. Now that's spelled growwildmt.org. Or you can call 406-209-0905. Again, their number is 406-209-0905. They also are having a wildflower and weed hike on June 17th from 9 to 11. You rendezvous at the Deer Creek Trailhead. The hike will last 2 hours and proceed at a plant identification pace. And that is free and open to everyone. Wild Montana is looking for volunteers to join a trail crew June 8th and 9th, working on Cliff Creek Trail and maybe Lewis Creek Trail. Now, I'm going to give you a contact, and I am going to spell it out for you because it's both capital and lowercase letters. The contact person is Dean Center, and his contact is capital M, capital G, capital A, and then DOPTATRAIL @gmail.com. So that's the person you contact for more information before registering, and you can get that registration link from him. There will be a carpool the morning of June 8th to the trailhead if you'd like to catch a ride. Wild Montana is also looking for trail ambassadors for this summer. A typical trail ambassador experience entails spending half of a day at the trailhead, engaging with trail users, providing information on trail conditions and etiquette, answering questions, doing trail reports for the Forest Service, and picking up trash where we find it. You can also choose your own adventure. Whether you prefer to spend the day at the trailhead or hit the trail, you can make a difference while having fun and enjoying the outdoors. All you need to bring are good hiking shoes, lunch or a snack, and water if you plan to hike. We'll provide training when you arrive. The Trail Ambassador opportunity coming up next is Saturday, July 6th. It's the Beehive Basin Trailhead. And they will have registration coming soon. But in the meantime, you can contact Tammy at tclark.nirai@gmail.com to answer, and she'll answer any questions you have about the Trail Ambassador program. And she might even be able to send you a heads up when the registration is open to take part. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has an ongoing program called Becoming an Outdoors Woman, or BOW. The workshop coming up next is going to be in Kalispell on June 21st and 22nd. You'll need to register for this one. Just click the education link at fwp.mt.gov and use the BOW Workshops tab to learn more. Here's a little more about that event. It's at Kalispell, Montana. Embrace the beauty of nature and enhance your outdoor skills at the Becoming an Outdoors Woman event, taking place on Friday evening, June 21st, and all day Saturday, June 22nd, at the scenic Lone Pine State Park in Kalispell. This enriching event offers a unique opportunity to learn hands-on outdoor skills from local experts, fostering a deeper connection with nature and building confidence for responsible outdoor adventures. And a little bit about what you can expect that day. This event is designed to provide valuable resources and skills that extend beyond the event itself. The structure includes engaging sessions and three themed tracks: outdoor essentials, ecological discoveries, and nature's arts. Each track offers a variety of options tailored to enhance your outdoor experience. The outdoor essentials: you master practical skills such as leave no trace ethics, map navigation, safe hiking techniques, and archery. And you get to choose your priorities on those, I will tell you. And this goes for all the categories. The next one is ecological discoveries. Deepen your appreciation for nature through bird, wildflower, and tree identification. And the next category is nature's arts. Capture the beauty of the outdoors with photography, watercolor, sketching, and nature journaling. With small group sessions of 10 to 15 participants, each attendee will receive personalized guidance, ensuring a meaningful and educational experience. The event fee is $45, and participants must be 18 years or older to attend. Don't miss this chance to embark on a diverse journey of learning and exploration in the great outdoors. Space is limited, so be sure to register for this event. Direct questions to Outdoor Skills Coordinator Kylie Kembrell at 406-444-5280. Or her email is kylie.kembrell@mt.gov. You can also go to FWP website and look for the BOW information. If you're looking for an outing that focuses a little more on birds, you still have time on June 6th from 8 to 9:30 in the morning to do the last spring bird walk at Story Mill Community Park. It's free, but you do have to pre-register. Here's a little more about that event from the Sacagawea Audubon webpage. It says, this spring, Sacagawea Audubon Society is again partnering with the City of Bozeman to offer free guided bird walks at Story Mill Community Park. Explore the nature sanctuary within the park, visit the viewing blind at the bird feeding station, and enjoy the many bird species that call the Story Mill area home. Meet in front of the Story Mill Community Center off of Bridger Canyon Drive at 8 a.m. If possible, bring binoculars for a unique birding experience. Participation is free, pre-registration is required, and that's so they can keep the numbers down so they don't overwhelm the birds. Go to the Sacagawea-Audubon.org webpage, and under Spring Bird Walks at Story Mill Community Park, which is listed in their events, you're going to find the link where you can pre-register for this walk. And this week, Sacagawea-Audubon's Wetland Bird Walks are Friday, June 7th and Sunday, June 9th. The walks are from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Fridays and Sundays this June. You meet at Cafe M for a brief talk about the Indreland Audubon Wetland Preserve and its future, and then walk to the preserve. Bring your binos and your enthusiasm for birds and wetlands. All levels of birding experience are welcome and no registration is needed. For more info, email wetlands@sacagaweaaudubon.org. And if you love local history, the Extreme History Project is offering exhibit and building tours at their historic office in Bozeman. They say, join us for our newest exhibit, Illuminating the Shadowed World of Bozeman's Historic Red Light District. This is an exhibit and building tour, so we stay inside with no walking. We offer exhibit tours on Fridays at 1 p.m., Saturdays at 1 p.m., and Tuesdays at 11 a.m. And you can go to extremehistoryproject.org to get more information. They also list upcoming walking tours for the Hidden History Rediscovering Bozeman Creek, also Seeking Fortunes, Bozeman Historic Chinese Community. Another walking tour will be along the Galligator, History of the Railway, South Tracy, and more. And they have a new tour, Historic Tin Ceilings. Now, those walking tours go through the summer. Go to extremehistoryproject.org for more information on all these things. And they also have their weekly tours, Murders, Madams, and Mediums, Bozeman's Dark Side Walking Tour, Tents to Town, Bozeman's Historic Main Street Walking Tour, and Ghosts of Bozeman's Past, Historic Sunset Hill Cemetery Walking Tour. Hey, that's where I am today. The Valley of Flowers chapter of the Montana Native Plant Society has an event coming up next Saturday, June 8th at 9 a.m., the Madison Buffalo Jump State Park at Three Forks. Besides its cultural interest, the Buffalo Jump has been free of grazing for decades and has diverse grassland and sagebrush juniper steppe habitats. Meet at the parking area for a leisurely half-day ramble with leader Jeff Copeland. And if you need more information, you can call 406-539-6029. And it says to pack a lunch and wear sturdy footwear. So again, you meet in the parking lot there at the Madison Buffalo Jump State Park, Saturday, June 8th at 9 a.m. And I am so happy we have time for a field note from Montana Natural History Center today. Thank you to them, and thank you to the Acoustic Atlas for our sound effects right now. The title of the field note is The Plains Spadefoot Toad, Singer, Burrower, and Essential Part of the Water Cycle. Enjoy this little bit of nature.
It's time for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center. Soon you'll hear them. As spring rains tame the dust of the Montana plains and rinse the grasses briefly to green, spadefoot toads, Speya bomba frons, will stir for the first time in a year and clamber from burrows beneath the soil's frostline to the surface. There they will congregate in pools of snowmelt and rainwater, and they will sing. To our ears, singing may seem an overgenerous description of this mating chorus. A pond well-populated with Speya bomba fronds sounds a bit like a classroom full of kindergartners with kazoos. For the toads, however, there are no accompanying giggles, because they are in a race for survival, a race against evaporation. Water doesn't come often to the prairie east of the Rocky Mountain front, and what little there is doesn't stick around long. This region has a semi-arid climate, which means the amount of precipitation that falls in a year is less than the rate at which moisture is returned to the atmosphere through plant action and evaporation, a combination of processes called evapotranspiration. For an amphibian like the spadefoot toad, this water scarcity defines every aspect of its life cycle. Once the toads have mated, females will lay an unseemly number of eggs, up to nearly 4,000, in the temporary pools and ponds near their burrows. Surviving adults will feed on small insects and spiders, then use the keratinous spades on their hind legs to dig new burrows in which to wait out the coming heat. The babies, meanwhile, hatch into tadpoles within a single day and metamorphose into adults within a few weeks, one of the speediest toad childhoods on the North American continent. Many tadpoles are omnivorous, feeding on algae and small invertebrates. If there is an abundance of fairy shrimp, or if the water is drying up quickly, some tadpoles morph into carnivores, and sometimes cannibals, with large, serrated mouthparts. These tadpoles become adults faster than their omnivorous siblings, but will be indistinguishable from them once reaching adulthood. If their aqueous home lasts long enough, the newly grown spadefoots join their parents underground just in time to avoid a scorching. Speya bomba fronds burrow to depths of almost a meter where traces of moisture remain in the soil, but little do they know their burrows act as a positive feedback switch, an action in which a community of organisms alters its environment to be more suitable to the community's needs. As spring wanes and summer progresses, the sandy soils above the toads dry out, grasses and plants fall dormant, microbial life slows, and the soil compacts. Ironically, the drier soil becomes, the drier it wants to remain. Compact soil becomes hydrophobic, so that sudden surges of water, like melting snow and spring rains, run off quickly instead of soaking in. These same surges of water call Speya bomba fronds from their burrows at just the right moment. As they scramble to the surface, they leave behind deep channels of loose soil, pathways for water to penetrate the hard ground and initiate a chain of reactions. As moisture returns to the deeper soil, hosts of microbes resume eating, pooping, and reproducing. They band together to create teeny tiny hydrophilic pockets or pores in the soil, which hold water and create space for further infiltration. All the while, Speya bomba fronds sing and carry on with their reproductive blitz. Spadefoot toad burrows may be harder to spot than the toads are to hear, but they play an important role in the water cycle, the same water cycle that you and I depend on. Positive feedback switches like this are everywhere, and when they are running smoothly, they create densely interconnected, collaborative ecosystems that sustain themselves over long periods of time. And that is great news. It's not always dog-eat-dog out there, after all. Today's Field Note was written by Alyssa Rago. I'm Allison DeYoung for Field Notes, brought to you by the Montana Natural History Center, providing natural history education for schools and the public throughout Montana. To find out about upcoming events and programs at the center, call 406-327-0405 or visit our website at montananaturalist.org.
My thanks to Ken Lane for his continuing work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening today. Sounds today were from the Sunset Hills Cemetery and the Lawnmowers. You can leave me a text or a message about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Till next week, stay well and sweet dreams. And thanks to Alexi Murdoch for taking us out with his song, Breathe. It's good advice for living in the world right now. See you next week.
Quiet of a shadow in the corner of a room, darkness moves upon you like a cloud across the moon. You're aware in all the silence of a constant that will turn, like the windmill left deserted or the sun forever burned. So don't forget to breathe, don't forget to breathe. Oh, life is here, no 11th hour reprieve, so don't forget to breathe. Keep your head above water, but don't forget to breathe. And all the suffering that you've witnessed, and the handprints on the wall, they remind you how it's endless, how endlessly you fall. And then the answer that you're seeking, for the question that you found, drives you further to confusion as you lose your sense of ground. So don't forget to breathe, don't forget to breathe. Roll, life is here, no 11th hour reprieve, so don't forget to breathe. Keep your head above water, but don't forget to breathe. Breathe. And don't forget to breathe, don't forget to breathe. You know you are here, but you find you want to leave, so don't forget to breathe. Just breathe. Just breathe. Just breathe. Just breathe.